Welcome to the Sermon Podcast of Redemption Church. The following sermon is by our Director of Media and Worship, Susan Alloway. Isaiah 58. Shout it aloud, do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their rebellion, and to the descendants of Jacob their sins. For day after day they seek me out. They seem eager to know my ways, as if they were a nation that does what is right and has not forsaken the commands of God. They ask me for just decisions, and they seem eager for God to come near them. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves and you have not noticed? Yet on the day of your fasting, you do as you please, and you exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife and in striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for people to humble themselves? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying in sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast? A day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, "Here I am." If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your fame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride in triumph on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. Declare to my people their rebellion. Merry Christmas. So this might not seem like a Christmas passage at all, talking about fasting and true fasting. Like, Christmas is this time of feasting, right? But I assure you that it will fit. So let me ask you a question first. How do you react when there's trouble in your life? How do you react when there's trouble in your life? Most of you have been to my house, and most of you know that Gary and I are a little bit obsessed with the Enneagram, and because of us, you've probably been forced to learn whatever your number is. And so this week, while I was working on this sermon, I found this graphic. Here is an example, a stereotypical example, of what all of the personality types, how they would react in times of trouble. So I'll read them. Type 1, which is me, type 1 would say, "Let's get this fixed right." Type 2 would say, "How can I help?" Type 3 would say, "When this is over, will we look successful?" Type 4 might say, "Can't we find a creative solution to this trouble?" Type 5 might say, "Let's really think this through." Type 6 There are a lot of problems with that solution. Type 7, let's keep our options open. Type 8, we need to get a move on. And type 9, well, if that's the decision of the group, then I guess I'm on board. So these are all stereotypical options, but I think a lot of us, sometimes we react poorly in times of trouble. But the whole point of the sermon that I want to share with you is this one idea, that all trouble is actually an opportunity for God to do something big. I'll say it again. All trouble is an opportunity for God to do something big. So in this sermon, I'm going to talk about what is fasting and why do people do it in the first place? What is the problem in our passage that we see? What does true fasting look like, and do we have any examples of that? And lastly, how do we put that on? So first, what is fasting and why do people fast? If you did an association game, the words that you would probably come up with the word fasting are these: weep, to mourn, to wear sackcloth and ashes, to deny oneself, to do no work, afflict one's soul, and humble yourself. These aren't bad associations. These are just the things that we think of when we think of fasting. And the purpose of fasting, in my studies this week, I found 5 different purposes for fasting. The first one was as a sign of grief or mourning, as if a loved one had died. The second was as a sign of repentance or seeking forgiveness for sin. The third is as an aid to prayer. This one I think is funny, just because if any of you have seen toddlers when they get really hungry, you can tell that they're like, they feel every single emotion possible and probably are going to break down on you. So that's kind of what fasting can be as an aid to prayer. It can heighten your emotions and your focus. And number 4, as an experience of the presence of God that results in the acceptance of his will. But the main focus of that is to go back to focusing on the presence of God. And then the 5th one was as an act of ceremonial public worship. So like we do this together. Let's say all of us decided that we were going to fast together, which we do in Lent sometimes. But when I look at all of these, I think the thing that they have in common, and I think the thing that we're supposed to get from the idea of fasting, is this main purpose of returning to the sustaining presence of God. Because it's not the food that sustains us, it's God, right? And probably the first example that we have of this is actually in Genesis, just the Garden of Eden. At the very beginning, God provides food and he says, eat this, don't eat this. Deny yourself this. And it's kind of funny to me because that all happens before the fall. It happens before evil creeps in. This idea of denial and self-discipline, they come narratively before evil shows up. And in that space, God is very close to humanity. And so the purpose of fasting, the purpose of denying oneself in that context is being in the presence of God, of a sustaining God, trusting that God provides, trusting that God takes care of stuff. Because in reality, all trouble is an opportunity for God to do something big. So what's the problem in our passage? In the passage that we read in Isaiah 58, I feel like they do what a lot of us do. When things get bad enough to start fasting, then those things are probably really bad. And when things get really bad, it's most likely that we've succumbed to the temptation already to try to control, to plan, to scheme, and to work our way out of the trouble that we're in on our own. So here's another toddler reference. When like 2-year-olds try to put their winter coats on for the first time and they decide that they're going to zip up the zipper on their own. And you clearly know that they can't do this, but as soon as you try to help them, they turn around and say, "No, I do it." And they won't let you help. Or as Rosie says, I think I have a picture on here, as Rosie likes to say, "I can do it my own self." So the problem within this passage is that they're faking it. They have the right costume, right? They're wearing their sackcloth and ashes. They look really pious, but deep down they can't actually do it. They can't do it on their own, and they still think they can. Instead of drawing nearer to God and saying, "God, I trust you. I trust you to provide, and I trust you to make a blessing out of whatever happens." Instead of doing that, they put on their costume and then they go abuse their workers. They take advantage of the people in their fields so that they can maybe make a little bit more money to pay off whatever trouble it is that they have. They promote systems that will put them ahead and keep others down. They start fights. They attack one another. And they wonder why their piousness isn't working. They're not really fooling anyone. But they want their trouble to be fixed so badly that they're willing to do anything, even hurt other people, in order to see it fixed. They don't really have the faith that all trouble is an opportunity for God to do something big. Not for them to do something big, but for God to do something big. So what does true fasting look like instead? If we have that example of what not to do, what does true fasting look like instead? And do we have any examples? I would consider skipping this, but I think I'll end up being too short if I don't. A while back, we had a bunch of people over to our house for dinner, and in the middle of conversation, people asked, "What is your favorite Christmas song?" And it took me forever to figure out what mine was, but I eventually did figure it out, and it's this one that I'm going to sing for you, if you don't mind. I wonder, as I wander out under the sky, how Jesus, my Savior, did come for to die. For poor, ornery people like you and like I wonder, as I wander out under the sky, when Mary birthed Jesus sky. Jesus, Emmanuel, God with us. Jesus is our example of true fasting, of true denial. And it's not just with food, right? Jesus is given as a gift to us around this time of year. That's what we celebrate. And when he comes as a baby. He is born into poverty. He experiences hunger. He experiences cold. He experiences sadness and loss and betrayal. And he experiences pain. And probably the one that cuts me the most is actually demonstrated in Philippians 2, 6 through 8. Jesus, who, being in the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. So if anybody had the right to use their power and their connections to their advantage, it's Jesus. But he doesn't. Jesus knows that all trouble is an opportunity for God to do big things. And as such, he's willing to give everything. And because he's willing to give everything, he defeats the most oppressive system of all, death. Jesus knows that all trouble is an opportunity for God to do something big. So how do we put this on? In Jewish tradition, there is this idea that the day actually starts when the sun goes down, not when the sun comes up. In Genesis 1, and there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. This means that the first thing that we do every day is go to sleep. It means that the first thing we do is become unconscious and trust God to take care of things for just a little while. I love this idea because I'm a control freak, and if it were up to me, I would wake up in the morning, my day would start in the morning, and I would work to get everything done on my own. I would feel responsible for absolutely everything, and then I would reluctantly go to bed and maybe hand things over. But I love this idea, this changing of my thinking, because it forces me to trust God first, to give up control first, and to wake up in the morning and realize that I just get to take part in something that God's already doing. I get to partner in this thing that God started. So the first thing we can do is trust, rest, and sleep. Other ways that I personally can put this on, and you might have to translate this a little bit for yourself, but hopefully you'll see it. Other ways that I can personally put this on is to let myself go without. So for example, this is gonna seem really silly, but I might really want that dress that's in my shopping cart. But if I don't know that whoever made it was treated fairly and paid decently, then I should put it back. Otherwise, I'm continuing to promote systems of injustice. Another one is, I might really want my relatives to affirm my personal or political values, but when I'm talking to them, if they don't hear Christ when I talk about these topics, then maybe I should just keep my mouth shut and trust God enough to let them just think that I'm wrong until I can learn to actually sound like Christ. And another one I came up with was this. I might want my children to grow up with every advantage and opportunity possible. And I do. I really do want the best for them. And I want them to succeed. But if in the end they become successful not due to their hard work and their expertise, if they become successful because they are the right race or the right gender, I should have a problem with that. And even if it means that I don't benefit, I should do all that I can to make sure that systems of injustice are broken. Because this is true fasting, to love your neighbor and trust that God has your back. This is true fasting. Because no matter what comes your way, all trouble is an opportunity for God to do something big.
To find out more about Redemption Church, visit redemptionbristol.org.